There seems to be a growing movement calling for the return of stolen artifacts to their homeland, especially when a nation with a claim to these artifacts requests or demands it. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be examining the art world and whether or not artifacts and artwork should be repatriated, as well as the role of modern art in today's world. Looting art and precious artifacts of defeated people by war has been common practice since ancient times. And these treasures are taken back to the victor's capital to be displayed as trophies of war and conquests. Museums today now house many of these looted treasures, and while they're no longer displayed as trophies of war, they're still displayed for educational and cultural purposes so that all the public can enjoy these national treasures. However, today, debates around the colonial context of these acquisitions by Western museums have centered around arguments in favor of repatriation. Repatriation refers to returning cultural property or looted artifacts back to their country of origin. And the pace of repatriation has accelerated in recent years. The Getty Museum in LA returned 3 terracotta figures to Italy, the Denver Art Museum shipped 4 antiques back to Cambodia, the Smithsonian returned 29 Benin bronzes back to Nigeria, and the London Hornemund Museum said it would return 72 treasured artifacts back to Nigeria. In 2020, the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. returned nearly 11,500 looted objects back to Iraq and Egypt, including 5,000 papyri fragments and 6,500 clay tablets. So, what is the point of all these repatriations, and why are museums so against it? Museums are against the repatriations because the purpose of these museums is to showcase things of cultural value from around the world, especially if some people are not fortunate enough to travel. Of the top 10 most visited museums yearly, all but one are located in Europe or North America, with the exception being in Beijing, China. These countries have museums that are subsidized well enough to care for and display historical artifacts that can be viewed by possibly millions of people. However, some people feel that museums should return artifacts to their original countries because they're the remnants of colonialist ideologies and regimes. However, there are questions regarding who owns the artifacts and where's the documentation to prove that. Many ancient or historical kingdoms from which many objects originally came from no longer exist or spread across many contemporary national borders, such as those of the ancient Roman Empire. Another point to consider is the question of whether or not the artifacts will be properly cared for, or if the origin country has the security to even protect them. Financially, museums would be in a lot of trouble with the loss of precious artifacts. For example, the British Museum made an estimate of £4 million in 2020 from their vast collections of artifacts during the colonial period. Hence, the main reason for withholding repatriations of artifacts does not fall under disrespect or ignorance, but rather the risk of inefficient maintenance and economic loss.
Joining us today is attorney Lila Amendola.
How much have museums gained with art that doesn't belong to them, and how much value have the countries lost because of the theft of their cultural art?
I think it's a really hard value to quantify because really the art is priceless. It's not just about the monetary values in terms of tourism and revenue and sales from their gift shops. I think a lot of the value is cultural. So it's a really hard number to quantify, but these values are really, I would say, high or really important for, say, for just mankind and for people enjoying art and heritage.
But on the other hand, should all art be repatriated? If all artifacts were to be repatriated, many museums would actually sit empty. So what's the point of even having a museum when the purpose was to bring in things from all corners of the world so that people can enjoy them in a central location without ever having to travel?
So I don't think all art should be repatriated. I think that we should be examining the circumstances under which these objects were brought to the museum. So if objects were stolen from a country, if they were taken during times of violence, then I think those objects should be repatriated. But I even think that those origin countries, countries that want their works back, aren't looking to have every object returned. I think they're looking for specific pieces that are symbolic of their people, or objects that help to tell a story that those countries can't tell. I had read a statistic that about 90% of art from Africa has been looted from Africa. So these nations can't even tell their own stories of their past. So I think that I don't think there's a real danger that museums are going to be emptied because countries want all their works back. But I think countries are mindful in selecting certain pieces. And I think there is a lot of value to these, what we call encyclopedic museums, museums like the British Museum and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's wonderful that we have works in one place where we can see the objects kind of in the context of world history. And there is a lot of value there, but that doesn't mean that objects should only be in those museums and that these origin countries don't have access to their own art.
Now, many source countries do not have adequate facilities or personnel, whether due to poverty or armed conflict. So many artifacts are actually safer where they're actually housed now. Should these pieces be repatriated where most likely they'll end up getting destroyed or damaged?
That's a really difficult question. And I think we have to look at those circumstances as well. So there have been programs, for example, in the US where US museums could hold on to objects that were taken from Iraq and Syria, and that those objects wouldn't be returned until it was safe to do so. I think this has been done historically as well. Even during World War II, objects were removed from museums, put away in safekeeping, and then didn't return to museums until it was safe to do so. So I think we can continue with that type of that kind of problem solving when you have objects that aren't safe returning home. And I know there are some situations that are especially complicated, like if you're considering objects from Afghanistan and the Taliban, perhaps those objects shouldn't be returned now while the Taliban's in rule. So I think you have to look at specific circumstances, but I think the danger there is that a lot of Western museums will say that it's not safe to return works to the Middle East in general, or to African countries in general, kind of just making these blanket statements so that works won't be returned.
Would you say that modern art is simply a product of marketing, and that if an esteemed collector or gallery were to endorse it, similar to any consumer good that's being endorsed by celebrity, that's enough to justify a high ticket price?
So I don't think all modern art is just, or the prices attached to modern art are just a result of marketing. I think marketing's been around, you know, for centuries. There's always been trends of who the hot painters were. I mean, if we think about it, you can think of like Leonardo and Michelangelo as like hot painters. So I think there's always been a marketing aspect for art. I think there's a lot of merit in modern art as well. But there are definitely trends, and there are definitely there are celebrity endorsements and galleries themselves that know how to market artworks by using social media accounts and placing works with high profile customers. But there is still a lot of merit in modern art, but I think that's with any type of art or any type of good. You're not necessarily getting the highest quality all of the time. And I think different brands market. So I think it's the same in the art world as well.
When we come back, is art, specifically modern art, a way to launder money? Is there any real value in it? Don't go away.
I blame the Americans if they are ditching me today? No, that's wrong. I was on my own. I'm very realist. Yes, in the case of the Ukraine, if the Ukrainians think that they are fighting for their own independence, sovereign existence, then of course they should be indebted to the Western countries. They are supporting them. If they are thinking that they are fighting for the defense of the liberal democratic world, I think they will be the losers.
Аварии, у каждой ошибки, у каждой катастрофы обязательно есть фамилия, имя и отчество.
Greater Finland to the Urals. The Nazi theory of racial superiority, Finnish style. 4 years of Karelian SSR occupation. 14 concentration camps. 34 prisoner of war labor camps. 10 prisons.
В Карелии был геноцид против русского народа. В чистом виде. Они все население поделили на две части. Привилегированное карело-финское население и русское население.
Approximately 25,000 people went through the archipelago of Finnish camps, according to official figures.
Здесь был штаб, там были ворота. Это вся территория лагеря.
Мария, наша сестра, Надя Ростовцева, Генка Костромин. Я вот...
Famine, disease, forced labor, torture by the wardens.
Трупы умерших вывозили на подводах 2-3 раза в неделю. От 25 до 30 гробов за один раз.
Мы до сих пор не знаем точные цифры погибших вообще на территории Карелии, даже Петрозаводского концлагеря.
Thousands of testimonies of crimes and the impunity of criminals.
Нас голыми выгоняли на улицу, садились перед нами надзиратели и фотографировались на память. Это писали люди, которые были там. Это свидетельские показания. И подтверждение того, что это было.
The art world is very opaque, and unlike industries like real estate, where buyers and sellers are vetted and known and recorded, transactions are typically masked. Art typically accommodates those who want to anonymously buy high-dollar paintings, and the industry actually allows for large cash deals. Art dealers are not obligated to disclose the identities of their buyers. That means that anyone who has the money to buy art can. No questions asked. So for those looking to launder money, art is a very attractive vehicle. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime estimates that the underground art market, which includes thefts, fakes, illegals, imports, and organized looting, may bring in as much as $6 billion annually. The portion attributed to money laundering and other financial crime is in the $3 billion range. Now, this is a significant chunk, as approximately $300 billion is laundered through the U.S. each year. And especially compared to other things like cryptocurrency, in which only $2.8 billion was laundered in 2019. Art was more than double that of cryptocurrency. When Mexico passed a law in the 2010s to require more information about buyers and how much cash is spent, the market cratered as sales dipped 70% in less than a year. Many believe that this was because Mexican cartel rings had previously been the biggest buyers in the market. So now, what is modern art, and how much is it really worth? Well, that's a tough question, because the value of modern art is entirely subjective. It is easy to see why a historically significant painting is worth a lot of money. It is skillful, detailed, and stands the test of time. The artist is not alive anymore, which adds to the value of the piece, as there is a finite number of works available. However, compare that with a modern work of art, something like Cy Twombly's Untitled, and it is just baffling how this big red scribble on canvas is valued at $46 million. Another piece, like The Comedian, which is essentially a rotting banana duct-taped to a wall, sold for $120,000. Many speculate that a blend of money laundering and a constant boundary disintegration in the modern art world has given birth to this ugliness as we now know as modern art. Because it actually doesn't matter what the art looks like, because it's not about making good art anymore. It's about covering up dirty money. And artists now are focused more on creating what will sell easily versus objectively high quality or beautiful art. Modern art doesn't have to have a clear and set market value like other industries. Money laundering is rampant, and art is also very easy to smuggle and move around. The Economist estimated in 2013 that the Geneva Freeport might hold more than $100 billion worth of US art sitting tucked away in a space that also functions as a tax haven. Art collectors also have creative ways to use artwork as ways to defer paying taxes as well, including the establishment of private museums and foundations, storing art in offshore freeports, and loopholes in the tax code such as like-kind exchanges.
Leela is now here with us again.
Are some of the famous works out there in reality just forgeries that nobody knows about? And are there some forgeries that can never be detected?
That's a really fun question because I think it brings up some of these conspiracy theory ideas as well, that some of the great works we're looking at are just forgeries. And in fact, that's just a theory that's been circulating about the Mona Lisa, that the Mona Lisa is just way too valuable to actually have on display, and that the real one is hidden somewhere in some type of vault or bunker. There are a lot of forgeries out there. And I think it's hard to detect ones like works that are forgeries. There are potentially works that we've been looking at for decades or maybe even centuries that are forgeries. But it's really hard to know which works are unless that work is really scrutinized, and that scrutiny can be done with forensic science, by the work of connoisseurs, by looking at the history of a work. So for fine art and antiquities as well, there's often documentation that's forged to accompany a work for sale. So you may think that a work came from an artist's studio or that it had this really prestigious past, this history, but in fact, it could be a modern forgery that is accompanied by forged documents. So there are a lot of forgeries circulating. So it's important that people purchasing art are very mindful of that and actually take the steps to ensure that they don't by forgeries. So people will come to my law firm sometimes with questions about works that they're interested in buying. And they'll ask us if we can help authenticate a work. So we are not experts in authentication, but we'll advise our clients to use experts and to use reputable experts who can examine the work and give an opinion about the style of the work. So these would be art connoisseurs that can give you an opinion on the stylistic features of a work. We also sometimes recommend clients use a forensic scientist to test the pigments, to test the materials in the works to make sure that they're correct for the artist. And then, of course, we'll also sometimes use researchers to dig into the past of the work to see if the work had ever appeared on the art market, if it had gone to auction, you know, there are receipts, information about the works in catalogs or exhibitions. And we say that those three aspects of authentication are like a three-legged stool. So you kind of balance all of those considerations so that a client can make a better determination about whether the work is authentic or a forgery. And then as lawyers, if a client does want to proceed with a purchase, as lawyers will prepare the legal documents and, you know, write those contracts so that if there is a problem down the line, then that buyer could get his or her money returned. I think people are becoming more aware. So they're doing a little more due diligence, and the prices on the art market are really skyrocketing. So it's essential to protect your purchases. But we don't just do work with forgeries and authentication. So the art market is hot right now. So I think a lot of lawyers who are practicing in art law are busy.
How big is the forgery market? What percentage of the art market is made up of forgeries? And can you give us a dollar amount of how much art per year is forged?
So there are a lot of estimates on how large the market is for forgeries, or what the percentage of works out there, if they're forged or not. And I think those estimates go from like 20% of the market is forged to 50% of the market. But in looking at those numbers, we also have to consider like what works we're looking at. So I would say a lot of kind of lower market to middle market, there are more forged works in those markets. So works that are perhaps around $150,000 and below. The more valuable works, you know, works that are sold for $500,000 or more, people will conduct more due diligence. So if it's less, the works are less expensive, there's not as much scrutiny, and it's easier to pass those works on the market. So I would say probably the lower end of the market has more forgeries than the upper end. So the works we're seeing in auction houses that are selling for multi-million, for many millions of dollars, those are the ones that are probably less likely to be forged.
And how is the art market used to launder money?
Yeah, so art is a really valuable commodity that's easy to move. So the example that I'll give to my students is that if you're trying to transport $10 million worth of cocaine, that's a really difficult thing to do, right? I mean, that's illegal. You'll get caught at customs. That's a very difficult criminal act to actually accomplish. Whereas transporting a $10 million painting is much easier to do. And in fact, some people will not declare those works, roll up canvases in their luggage, or get smaller pieces that are of value, conceal them, and cross the border with these objects that are incredibly valuable. So art has been used to launder money. It's a way to kind of clean money if there are proceeds from illegal acts. That money can then be put into art. Someone who's involved in organized crime could then invest that money, proceeds from drug trafficking or human trafficking, and put that money into an artwork and then legitimately be able to sell it.
The art world is the largest legal, unregulated industry in the world, with global sales reaching over $64 billion in 2019. And about 82% of global sales of the art in that year were made in the US, the UK, and China. The winners of this are obviously the criminals, who treat the industry like a watering hole. Artworks are faked, sold on the black market, and used to finance illicit activities or launder ill-gotten gains. They are easy to move, as a painting smuggled into the United States was actually worth $8 million. But the shipment invoice stated that it was only $100. So the customs officer let the shipment through, where it was hidden away at a secure warehouse for almost a decade before it resurfaced again. But now the industry is changing. There are calls to add transparency to the art world, controls at auction houses and art dealers on how to avoid doing business with sanctioned individuals, or requiring the Treasury to collect beneficial ownership information for companies formed or registered to do business in the country. In 2020, the EU and the UK adopted the fifth European AML directive and became the first jurisdiction in the world to regulate the art trade. Art traders are now perceived as financial institutions and must follow the AML requirements, including due diligence checks. Art dealers must also report both wire and cash transactions above $10,000. However, the international market was not so thrilled about this, especially art dealers, who argued that the regulation would bring about too much bureaucracy and eliminate the culture of privacy. While this is a step in the positive direction, the art market is an international segment and requires a coordinated global approach to combating money laundering for organized criminals. I'm Christy Ai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you back here next time on The Cost of Everything.